Hello, and welcome to Leading Community Colleges in California, a podcast that goes in-depth with California's most effective leaders in higher education in the largest public sector of higher education in the United States, California Community Colleges. I'm your host, Larry Galizio, President and CEO of the Community College League of California. In this episode of Leading Community Colleges in California, we speak with Evergreen Valley President Dr. Tamil Gilkerson. We learn about her passion for California community colleges as portals to opportunity for social and economic mobility, and her own extraordinary personal and professional journey as the first in her family of seven children to attend college. We also learn of her current role as president of Evergreen Valley College and her hopes for the future of California community colleges. Please join us. Dr. Tamil Gilkerson, president of Evergreen Valley College, welcome to Leading Community Colleges in California.
Thanks so much, Larry. It's good to be with you.
So on our podcast, in addition to talking about some of the pertinent issues, things that are happening at your college or statewide, and certainly we'll be talking about the affordability task force that you co-chair and all the important work that you've been involved with and leading. We also like to talk about community college leaders in California's the backgrounds. You know, what brought you here to get into this position now as a president? I know you have had several positions in California community colleges. So if you don't mind, if we can start there. My understanding is you grew up in Hayward, California?
I did, yeah. So I grew up in Hayward, California, so 17 miles away from where I live now in Oakland, California, and sort of grew up in the Bay Area and really was I'm one of seven children. So five of us were adopted when I was young. I came from an immigrant. I was adopted from Korea and my parents had two natural children and then subsequently ended up adopting four other children. So five of us are adopted. And so I grew up in a multi-ethnic, multiracial family. And it really gave me a, you know, incredible lens for sort of the world and my life and sort of my lived experience, right? My parents are both Caucasian and I identify as an Asian American. And so one of the interesting things for me was I was the first in my family to go to the college. And actually, I still am the first and only of my family to have graduated from college to this date. And so it was really a huge thing for my family, for me to go on to college, to really sort of see this opportunity. And so I was involved in something called the Early Academic Outreach Program when I was in high school. I came from a low-income family. Mm-hmm. And so really had this opportunity through the EAOP program through UC Berkeley to get exposure to college and what it meant and to get prepared. And so I really credit that program and affirmative action, frankly, with getting me in to college. And so it was at college where I realized, oh my gosh, there's this whole world that I feel like I never learned about in growing up, right? Like I just wasn't exposed to history and culture and all of these different pieces. And so it just really ignited in me this idea about access to information and how powerful it is when you give people this opportunity to learn and grow and to critically think and to see things in different ways, right? And so it really spurred me after college to think about continuing to work in education because I really was passionate about access to education. Mm-hmm. During my time in college, we were doing affirmative action movements were happening and we were protesting against them as a college student. And so I became like all out access queen, right? Protesting, mm-hmm. doing particular pieces. And so it wasn't until later that I really started to work for actually the Early Academic Outreach Program after I graduated from college. Mm-hmm. I got an opportunity to work at UC Berkeley and the Office of Student Life, and then the Early Academic Outreach Program, and it brought me full circle. I got this opportunity to really give back and work in middle schools and high schools and the community, and really do what was done for me, which was provide a pathway to college. But what I realized is that I really needed more education. So I went on to get a master's degree in counseling and started, you know, doing high school counseling, but then ended up going and working in the policy realm. So I worked for an organization called the Greenlining Institute. It's a multi-ethnic public policy organization. And greenlining is the antithesis to redlining, right? So communities have constantly had, you know, where we drew circles around maps and didn't invest in particular communities, particularly communities of color. And so this was a multi-ethnic coalition that was really built around deciding that if communities came together and stopped fighting over small pieces of the pie, but came together and actually fought in coalition to uplift communities and really think about what we could do jointly together, that there was real opportunity there. And through that work with greenlining, I was the education policy director, and I directed the academy. I had the opportunity to be exposed to community colleges in a different way. And really that was through a policy project that I led, which was to build UC Merced. So it was actually the first University of California campus to be built since the 70s, right, in California. We had built more prisons in California than we had higher educational institutions. And so through that process, I was young, right, leading this coalition, working with community organizers in Merced, in the Central Valley. And I got exposed to a gentleman named Ben Duran, who was the president and superintendent of Merced College. Ben, he was an incredible partner in, you know, fighting the Sierra Club over fairy shrimp and learning just about like community and all of these pieces. And so he really exposed me working with a coalition of this orthodontist and a policy person from Merced. We were able to actually, you know, get the campus approved. And so and built. And through that, I got exposure to him and California Community Colleges. And in a lot of ways, he said to me, "Hey, kid," I remember him, you know, suit and boots and everything, saying to me, "Hey, kid, I think you should think about community colleges one day as a possible, you know, pathway for you." And so I had never really thought about it. I had my local community college, Chabot College, which I never attended, but I went to as part of the EAP program. And so we would have classes and things there, but it was my local, you know, community college. So I hadn't really thought about that as a pathway for myself. And so it wasn't until later, after I left greenlining and was deciding what I would do, that I actually took a foray to, you know, go into community colleges. And so got my first job. Somebody took a chance on me, and his name was Gerald Shimada. He's now passed, but an incredible dean of special programs at Chabot College, who liked the fact that I had gone to UC Berkeley and was like sort of a 70s Asian, you know, leader who would help start ethnic studies there. And he was like, I believe in you. And so they were starting a new TRIO student support services program. And so I was hired as a counseling faculty member there. And so that's really my introduction to community colleges.
What a great story and a great, and it makes so much sense in terms of, you know, I know some of the work that you do. I was not aware of the UC Merced work that you did and that coalition and leading that. That's really fascinating. I don't think I saw that in your biography on the webpage at Evergreen College, but it's probably too long anyway. But it's very interesting. I'm very thankful to Ben Duran that he had you think about community colleges. So yeah, and when I was at Berkeley, it was divest from South Africa.
Yes.
And it was very exciting, and there were teach-ins. And so, I'm biased too. Having been able to be there during a very active period when there was a specific issue, it was very exciting. It added to the entire experience. But I just want to go back to, so seven, you grew up with six siblings, four others who had been adopted, and then two others. So it's probably impossible to comprehensively answer this question, but in terms of relating to our students, or just in terms of how it influences your perspective in what you do now or what you've done, can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. We're talking a lot about like humanizing our classrooms and like making sure that what we do in our curriculum and instruction and services like really reflects the students that we serve, right? But we're also grappling with like sort of these conversations around inherent bias that we have, and everybody has it, right? And so really beginning to sort of see people for what they are, but then also recognizing that I don't represent all Asian American, you know, female, women. There's intersectionality with who my identity, but I'm a book that's often been judged by its cover, right? I mean, I remember writing that in my college entrance essay. And it's because, you know, I grew up with parents who are both Caucasian and then siblings who are African American and Latinx. And then I was the Asian, you know, in the group. And so, you know, and my parents sort of taught me from a young age about like generosity of spirit, about kindness, and about folks who like literally had very little, Larry, like making it work, you know, to do this. And my siblings and I, we all each had different, you know, ability levels and gifts and things like that. And so watching my parents sort of find ways to help us each learn in our own ways individually and figure out what it was reminds me of sort of this opportunity that we have with our community colleges and the way that I see our students. So I think part of it is I know the story is so much deeper than what it looks like on the page. That lived experience is not what you read in a book or, you know, write in that, that it's so individual to the individual person. And so I try to come to each interaction with employees and with students and with system, like thinking about systems change in this way from that sort of lived experience for sure.
No, and I, yeah, you, I'm sure.
I'm like, I could go on and on.
Yeah, I know that it's such a huge topic, but that's,
but it's really, yeah. I think, you know, one thing though, that I think of, Larry, is that also my experience, I think working at Greenlining and then this learning about multi-ethnic coalition building, right? So not only did I feel like I had this kind of in my own family, but then learning the praxis of it and actually seeing on the ground, working for community reinvestment, working around education and health policy and, you know, banking, you know, reinvestments and things like that. I really began to see how policy really impacted folks. So remember I told you earlier, I was an access person. Once I got into community colleges and started working as a counselor, I realized really quickly that access alone wasn't enough, that we were fundamentally failing in some ways and doing amazing things. So I want to say, I love community colleges. I am like the biggest fan. And I have hope and belief in our system so much. That's why I do the work. But I also knew that there were a number of students who were not actually getting through and completing, right? And so to me, access alone, I had to become a practitioner who grew in my own learning to understand what it takes to really retain and understand students. And so I think that does connect to how do you see the whole student? How do we as a system, both at the policy level, at the statewide level, at the individual college, begin to think about the ways that one, you manage institutional praxis, but then also, you know, doing these particular things. So for me, every social policy that I saw having the policy lens that happened at the statewide level, you could see it play out at California's community colleges. If there was a change to welfare reform, you'd see it play out at community colleges. And we were on the front lines helping individual students deal with that. If you see realignment, you know, in California's realignment, we were seeing that play out at our colleges and learning how and figuring out systems that were, you know, we could do. So I without a doubt think I am amazed by California's community college system, the high, you know, the largest, you know, educational system in the nation. I just have so much appreciation for the leaders who've led before me and are leading now alongside me and that will come after me, because I just believe that we are the only ones, and not the only ones. I mean, I'll give it to UC and CSU. They did an okay job with me, but I just say we're the ones that really do see the full student and that full sort of panoply of like sort of what our students are grappling with and trying at the front end to support them in their learning.
Yeah, that description of the nexus between policy and outcomes and the impacts you see at the community college, immigration, Prop 209,
right?
You know, you can go down the list. And so not everyone, I think, understands that to the extent perhaps that you do because of your background. And so that's highly valuable, but that's great because it makes you a stronger advocate, both statewide and in the community. But that is such a critical analysis. That's why I've always been bothered by the term, the real world versus being, in college. Now I understand. I think that usually applies to Ivy League institutions, but at the same time, we reflexively call college or school not the real world, but everything that I've seen, and I think you just described it, it is the real world at a California community college.
Absolutely, right? I was just talking about, looking at the issue of student debt and talking about that. And, not only is it, debt that students take on or tuition and fees that are owed, or, if you're at a four-year college and university taking on loans to cover things. I mean, I just recently paid off my undergraduate student loan, right? Like I'm still paying off graduate school and things like that. But what I was telling this researcher was, respectfully, for me, it's not even just that, right? That's credit card policy too. I came out with tons of credit card debt because they give it away like candy, right? So it, absolutely, to me, even though I was going to school, it was the real world. I was robbing Peter to pay Paul on right. credit cards because my parents couldn't afford to send me to college, right? So I was working as a work study student, I was going to school, and I was trying to like figure out how to make ends meet. And that was years ago. I'm old now, right? So this is like the absolute lived experience of our students today. And when we have a system of students in California community colleges that are going part-time and how expensive it is to live in California, we can absolutely understand that it is absolutely the real world that our students are grappling with. They're not getting the choice that maybe I had a long time ago to quote unquote, supposedly go full-time, right? Even though I was working the entire time. So the myth that we've written about what a college student looks like, right? When I was the president of Laney College, I was always banging my head because I was like, our students aren't what you traditionally think. They're not the 18-year-olds who were coming to the college directly from high school. These were 20 plus years old and above, mostly like late 20s, 30-year-olds and above coming to that college searching for, right, an opportunity, another chance to, gain skills and see their pathways through a circuitous path that wasn't directly straight to those colleges. Where here at Evergreen, it is largely, students who are coming directly from, the K-12 pipeline. And so, but we can see statewide, right, demographics are changing, and we're looking at, right, changing demographics in all of our 72 districts. And we're going to have to grapple with the fact that, like, the changing face of students is not what people traditionally see. And so it is our responsibility to continue to tell the stories of our students and make sure we're uplifting the different looks and feels and lived experiences of those students through the work that we do.
Yeah, and those challenges that you had, arguably with the inequality that we have and the challenges, it's only grown worse. It's gotten more difficult. And so, which I think that is a logical segue to talk about, you're the co-chair and the league is very proud to support the work of the Affordability Food and Housing Access Task Force, which is a mouthful, but I guess pun intended or no pun intended, but just that title, I think, indicates the comprehensiveness. So I know that you could talk about many things, but could you just talk a little bit about some of the work that you've helped lead on that task force?
Yeah, first of all, I just want to give kudos, right, to the league for the support and really to the chief executive officers of the California Community Colleges, the board, who had the vision and understood in 2018 that what we were dealing with across our system was just this high prevalence of food and housing insecure students that was really, we were seeing it on our campuses every day, right? It was absolutely making it difficult to meet our success goals without understanding how to serve the whole student. And so really the design of creating this task force, and again, I want to thank our original co-chairs, Keith Curry and Pam Lester, both incredible CEOs in our state, really with the goal I think of this task force was to, for first of all, for us to learn, right? So I wanted to say that I think, first of all, it was for us to understand what was going on. So we were wanting to understand, elevate, research, and then recommend solutions to the affordability crisis. So this task force was convened. I've been proud to be on it from the beginning. And so we really dug deep in the first couple of years, really trying to figure out what we could do, where we could go, how we could sort of set the stage to say, you know, to our colleagues, to the state, how do we provide more support? How do we uplift these concerns, you know, statewide and the legislature, build coalitions around the work, and really begin to address the fact that we think that secure food access, housing access is essential for every Californian, first of all, but also for every student that we have here. So I'm proud to serve alongside. We have a task force that includes 10 CEOs. Those are college presidents, superintendent presidents, and chancellors representing the regions that we represent. We have 3 community college trustees who serve on the task force and 3 area experts that include the state chancellor's office, our basic needs specialists from there, the California Community College Facility Coalition, and the Foundation for California Community Colleges in their housing area. And then, you know, one of the things that we developed in 2019 was the Real College California Coalition. And so we have a representative from the Hope Center for College Community and Justice who helps support that network and is on the task force as well, including the incredible league staff. So I can't say enough about, you know, Sadie Brown, the government relations team, you, Larry, as well, in terms of, you know, this is the little task force that could. So I wanted to say everything that I'll talk about from here on out is a group of volunteers who are doing this in and above the jobs that they already do because we are passionate about understanding, elevating, and like trying to find, you know, some collective solutions, you know, to what's going on. So
yeah, no release time for the president.
No release time, right? So they all get mad at me. They're like, how do we have 7:30 a.m. meetings? And I'm like, come on, where was I going to get on your calendar? So, you know.
But again, it just sort of, as you talked about, you know, coalition building is sort of in your DNA based on your lived experience and then your, you know, professionally and everything that you've done. And so you continue to do that work, which is really exciting. And, you know, one of the things that I noticed is, and I know we want to get into some of the substance of the reports there has been. And by the way, I would just tell everyone that the reports that have been done, and there have been several, are on the league website under Affordability, Food, and Housing Task Force. I would urge people to take a look at the reports. They're not particularly lengthy, but they're dense and helpful with recommendations. If you're a college president or CEO or an advocate or a trustee, you should take a look at them. But I do recall, and I don't know that this exists so much anymore, but certainly in 2018, there were some, I think, of your colleagues who are saying, you know, is that really our... That's not really our job, right? We're educators and we have to have a, you know, run a college, and food insecurity, housing insecurity, that's not really our job. Is that what community colleges should do? I don't know if you think that still exists or we're at the point now where everyone realizes that's just reality.
I think I agree with you. Probably 2017, 2018, folks are like, man, we're being called to do so much as a system. And I certainly feel that too. I still feel it to this day, right? But I think it goes back again to this is the most incredible system that says at the same time, we want to serve the whole student and we want to see the student. And if we're going to meet our vision for success goals, our racial equity goals, and all these things, we cannot, you know, divide and, you know, bifurcate a student's lived experience in terms of serving them in the classroom. And that's everything we're called to do. And so I think absolutely you'll see across the state with basic needs centers and food pantries in particular, the state's support of hunger-free campus dollars. And what's happened is it's amazing. I mean, I honestly, like, I have so much love and respect for my colleagues across the state and the practitioners on the ground at every college who are doing the deep work. And our students need it. They've told us over and over and over again that they are hungry and that they do not have access to stable housing, unequivocally. And then add transportation, right, to that in addition. And, you know, I won't even, you know, start to go down, you know, mental health. I mean, we could talk, you know, it sort of becomes expansive. And that's what sort of happened in the work that we've done, is we've seen that it explodes, right, with the pandemic and the triple threat, right, of the pandemic, with how it's impacted particularly largely historically disenfranchised communities, the K-shaped recovery, where, you know, our communities continue to, again, not be invested in, right? We see these particular things. And I think that part of the role is, how do we kind of grapple with meeting students where they are, so that they're like sufficient, that they're raising families, and that they're doing, you know, these particular things.
A student who's hungry or is worried about, which couch am I going to sleep on, or am I going to sleep in my car? It's hard to do. It's hard to do, think about photosynthesis when you're doing that.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
So, you know, there's been a lot of work done on, you know, for food insecurity, that the work continues. And, you know, like you said, I think most recently, and this has been interesting, and maybe you talk a little bit about affordable housing and community colleges and housing, that has really been an interesting evolution over these last number of years.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of what's really interesting. So one of the first briefs that the task force took on, so we are in the process of, we've published two briefs so far, one on housing and one on transportation, and we're about to release our third on food insecurity. But one of the interesting things related to housing was that really, I mean, it can't be hard for Californians to realize that it's freaking hard to afford to live in California, right? And we see it on our streets. We see it in our own lives. Many of us, even who are working professionals, are one paycheck away from, right, not being able to pay the mortgage or the rent and those particular things. And so part of what we've really realized is that California community colleges are part of the solution statewide to looking at housing and making sure that people have access to that. And ultimately, when we look at things like affordability, right, is a really significant concern. So if you look at rental rates in California, they're some of the highest in the country. Right? I mean, it's just undeniable. So here where I am, both where I live and where I am here in the Silicon Valley, where in San Jose, where Evergreen Valley College is, the three California markets are their highest: San Francisco, Silicon Valley, and Santa Cruz are the three highest in the county for two bedroom apartments, top $3,000 a month. So $3,000 per month, right? I mean, there are people who are not even making a living wage, you know, not even a thriving wage, like barely a living wage, right? Being able to afford rents for a two bedroom apartment that work, you know, like this. Yeah. And so part of the issue that we're trying to grapple with is sort of, how do community colleges play a role in sort of the larger, you know, response of California thinking about this? And so we've done a lot of work and advocacy around thinking about housing and creating housing at California community college campuses. I mean, if you know, and Larry, you know the history of California community colleges. We were supposed to be that college in the community, right? You lived at home. But again, that's the traditional college, old school picture of what students are. And that's not the lived experience of the students that we have today. And so around 12 community colleges right now in California are working on or have housing developments, but we have 72 districts and 116 colleges spread out, you know, across the state. And so through legislation and budget and people like this and a lot of support from different coalitions, we are building our knowledge base and really beginning to look at how might we become a place that offers a student housing for students while they're going to our schools. And this, you know, raises a host of things, right? Again, that question about, like, are we to be that? Like, are we supposed to house and feed people? That wasn't necessarily our divine mission at the time. But this is what I think about the whole system, is that if we are going to be learner-centered institutions, we must grow as well. We must reflect as well. And what we once were, we are not any longer. And if we do not move, we will not serve our students well. And that ultimately, to me, is part of what we're doing. And so we've been really passionate and done a lot of great work, I think, around housing. And we'll be seeing, we see legislative dollars right now to fund, you know, housing projects and a lot of studies. So I think we're going to be seeing some gains here in the future. But, you know, that will come with a host of other things that we have to contend with and think about. But I think there's a lot of opportunity for us, and students have told us that they're interested. We just did a market study here in our area, and students want housing.
Okay. So. Yeah. And we're hearing that from your colleagues statewide, and there have been some successes in the legislature and some money. And so this work is having an impact. And yeah, community colleges, we don't have a town and gown problem so much as, you know, we are the community and the town.
Yes.
And so I like how you sort of situate community colleges as part of the solution, not the solution, but part and parcel of the solution. And I really appreciate how, you know, twice you've mentioned, you know, even being part of this task force, that first what everyone did was learn. Right? What do you do at school, or hopefully in life, you try to learn and what is actually happening out there, and then adapt and react and do what you can to support the students and the community. So learning, lifelong learning is obviously something that you practice as well as help facilitate. So if I might, so we skipped over the entire, your career at different places, but
oh, sorry.
No, that's okay. That's all right.
I'm like, who cares about all that?
No. But my understanding is you've been the president of Evergreen College since 2020. Is that correct?
Yes.
2020. And then prior to that, you were at Laney College, where you were the president since early 2017. And you were there for about 3 years.
Yes.
Before you earned your current role. You've also been vice president of academic and student affairs at the Contra Costa District, and also that you were the first diversity, inclusion, and innovation officer at Contra Costa, and you dean of counseling and matriculation at Evergreen. So you had been at Evergreen at an earlier stage of your career. Had you ever, had you imagined, well, maybe one day I'll be president here?
You know, I never did. So I think it's such an interesting thing. So, you know, I was telling you about how, you know, I had this opportunity to go and be a counselor, you know, coordinator of the TRIO Student Support Services Program at Chabot. And it was transformational. I mean, it really was. I mean, in real ways, like getting the opportunity to like be on the ground with students, to work with faculty colleagues and administrators, thinking about like solutions and stuff. It was so generative, Larry. Like, I just wish people could see and bottle what's happening in our college campuses. I was like, this is the work I should be doing. You know, where you're just inspired. Like, mm-hmm. That's how I felt. And I had gone to a leadership thing and I heard a leader speak. And I was so moved by the vision that she had for this district, the San Jose Evergreen Community College District, that I was like, I want to work for her. Like, I was like, I really want to go and work there. And so David Wayne Kuhn, who is now the president of College of Marin, took a chance on me also and said, I really think that you could be the dean of counseling matriculation here. And I think it was another transformational experience. We have at our community colleges. So I think about us also from like a larger perspective of, you know, often we think of a college like this and then our districts. And so, you know, you could be the huge Los Angeles district with 9 colleges or 4 college district or a single college district. But when we think of us like vastly together, right, we are like the largest employer in the state. Like, we just have so many things. Everywhere I go, people have been touched by a community college, right? They've had this sort of experience. And so those people getting the opportunity to work with classified professionals, student interns, administrative faculty who are excited about these things, my opportunity at Evergreen, it just continued. I think every role has inspired me to think like, maybe there's an opportunity at the next level to like actually impact change in some ways. But at every level, I felt like there was an opportunity to make impact, to change the way we saw things or do something, implement things, and really try to, you know, serve students with integrity, right? And respect for like their innate like abilities. And so it was never a like, I want to be a college president one day. Most of the time in my movement through the system has absolutely been somebody tapping me on the shoulder. So it was a vendor on who said, hey, I think you should think about it. When I was the dean of counseling, it was the college president at San Jose City College, Dr. Barbara Cavalier, who tapped me on the shoulder and said, I think you should come over and try to be a VP for me on a short term. And then she hired me the next year to be the vice president of instruction. And so, you know, it was those things. And it was similarly when I became the president of, when I left Contra Costa, and I loved my time at Contra Costa, being the vice president of academic and student affairs, that somebody tapped me on the shoulder and said, we think you should think about being a college president, right? So, and for me, the presidency was about looking at what the description said and what they needed. And I was like, oh, I'm kind of good at planning, or those are the kind of things that maybe I could add something, you know, a value there. So I've always tried to pick places where I felt like I could bring some value. And so it was never about the position. I think of myself not as this president, to be honest. I mean, I know I am, and I need to like own the space, and I'm very proud to serve amongst like incredible colleagues, but I think of myself as a teacher and an educator, and my role at the college is to educate and care for the faculty and classified professionals so that they can care for the students. Like we jointly do it together, but I'm an educator. That's my role, right? And so I try to keep that reminder so that ego doesn't get out of check and all these other things, because I just think all that's unnecessary. So I'm not chasing necessarily the next thing. It's for me, it's been about where the calling and where the tap on the shoulder has come to get me to think about myself in my own leadership.
That's refreshing perspective, although I would imagine at times with what you have to encounter, it's probably not always easy to view yourself. I'm an educator, right? Because of the administrative thing. So how do you maintain that perspective and not burn out or not get cynical, or what do you do to keep that spark going in that perspective?
Yeah, you know, I'll be honest. So we hosted the Real College California Basic Needs Summit in February, and it's our fourth annual one. Again, this is all volunteer based. The task force puts it on with the support of the league, and you know, and practitioners from across the state who put in, you know, to do workshops and things for us and speakers. But you know, ultimately, Larry, I mean, if nobody has seen the posting of what our students have said to us, it is absolutely every single time a student tells me the impact of what we've done is what keeps me going. I was listening to our student panel talk at the Basic Needs Summit about their hunger. Like they're like punching their stomachs because they're hungry and trying to like divide up food so that their sister can eat. They are trying to figure out housing for things, and they're going to school and killing it at the same time. So let me just say, they're not like, they're killing it. They're like doing amazing things. And I'm just like, how dare I sit right and not think that I can, you know, continue to do the work on behalf of them and the system, and like, and to meet that resilience, that goal in the same manner. So it absolutely has been hard. It has not been an easy road to truck. So, and you know this, Larry, right? Like it has not been at all. And I could go into a whole nother podcast about sort of the leadership challenges, the intersectional identity, the way people have viewed me as a president or not, and being, you know, a woman of color. But I think, you know, ultimately for me, it has been stepping back and just being reminded about the students and the transformational opportunities that I've gotten from them. Like they've transformed me. I've learned so much more about what it means to have to be transgender and what that identity is. I've learned so much more. I don't know what it's like to be housing insecure. I have learned directly from our students who've told me, you know, their lived experience. What an honor to hold space for, you know, students who are first generation and like doing all these things, right? So I think that's how I've kept it going. And I also want to say colleagues like you, like the CEO colleagues I have, the incredible people I get to work with, you know, this is not a job that I do in, you know, in a silo. Every good success I've had is because of the incredible work of the classified professionals, the faculty and the administrators I've had the, you know, really good opportunity to work with, and the partners like the League, and, you know, other community partners, you know, church organizations, the Rotary, you know, all these people. It's amazing what communities can do when they come together, right? All about coalition building again. So
that was, yeah, I mean, you got me inspired. I'm ready to run outside right now and go to, I'm closest to Los Rios, but I'm sure I could get in my car and come up there as well. So we hope that there are, I mean, typically trustees, your fellow CEOs, we hope faculty, classified staff, and we hope students download this podcast. But just in terms of any kind of closing thoughts or things that are on your mind that you would want to relay to people listening, either about you or about the future of California community colleges or something you're working on?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, again, I just want to uplift. I just love this system. Like I just do. It is, what an honor and a privilege, right? To like be a part of something, really remarkable. I mean, I think, and I think like being with these colleagues who've been working for the last several years on really doing this work around affordability and seeing the whole student. So, you know, I wanna remind folks that like your voice does matter in the policy realm, that you do have to like engage in these things, and that I invite you to learn, right? Like, cause I think that we get put in the role of expert a lot. And so you get nervous about like, oh my God, I don't know anything. And I think that like we in our culture do not allow people to ask for help, to say like, hey, you know, I don't understand what this is. Like, how does this impact me? And I found the more that I've opened to that, like learning and that openness, I've learned and gained a lot more. And so, you know, we need to start funding the whole student. We need CalGrant reform. We need to really work on, and where our brief is going to come out here soon, shortly, on food insecurity and the number of students who do not have, you know, access to adequate or safe food on a regular basis is a real concern for our communities. Our colleges have responded incredibly. There's creative things happening all across the state. And so, I mean, I wish I could uplift and say the name of every college that I know is doing great work. But I think what I would want to tell the legislator and what I want to tell students and my colleagues is bet on us. I would double down on California community colleges every single day. I think this is the most incredible place where design thinking is happening. Our students are building solutions to everyday world problems. Our CEOs are giving extra time to do this as well. Our administrators, our faculty. I mean, there are concerns and problems and issues that I think every system and everything has, but I'd bet on us every single day. Every single day I would do it. So that's probably what I'd say, Larry.
Oh, that's beautiful. Bet on us. That could be the next tagline for California community colleges. Dr. Tamil Gilkerson, president of Evergreen College. Evergreen Valley College. Pardon me. Thank you so much for being with us and spending some time, and all the best to you.
Thank you so much, Larry. My appreciation to you and the entire League team. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to join us for the next Leading Community Colleges in California podcast for more inspiring conversations with California community college leaders on their own professional and personal journeys and on the most significant and challenging issues confronting leaders in higher education today.